She kept her gaze on the ground. By the time she reached the shadow of the royal sept on the far side of the yard, Arya was cold with sweat, but no one had raised the hue and cry. The sept was open and empty. Inside, 50 prayer candles burned in a fragrant silence. Arya figured the guards would never miss two. She stuffed them up her sleeves and left by a back window. Sneaking back to the alley where she had cornered the one-eared Tom was easy, but after that she got lost. She crawled in and out of windows, hopping over walls, and felt her way through dark cellars, quiet as a shadow. Once she heard a woman weeping. It took her more than an hour to find the low, narrow window that slanted down to the dungeon where the monsters waited. She tossed her bundle through and doubled back to light her candle. That was Chauncey. The fire she'd remembered seeing had burnt down to embers, and she heard voices as she was blowing on the coals. Cupping her fingers around the flickering candle, she went out the window as they were coming in the door, without ever getting a glimpse of who it was. This time the monsters did not frighten her. They seemed almost old friends. Arya held the candle over her head. With each step she took, the shadows moved against the walls, as if they were turning to watch her pass. "Dragons," she whispered. She slid needle out from under her cloak. The slender blades seemed very small, and the dragons very big, yet somehow Arya felt better with steel in her hand. The long, windowless hall beyond the door was as black as she remembered. She held needle in her left hand, her sword hand, the candle in her right fist. Hot wax ran down across her knuckles. The entrance to the well had been to the left, so Arya went right. Part of her wanted to run, but she was afraid of snuffing out her candle. She heard the faint squeaking of rats and glimpsed a pair of tiny glowing eyes on the edge of the light, but rats did not scare her. Other things did. It would be so easy to hide here, as she had hidden from the wizard and the man with a forked beard. She could almost see the stable boy, standing against the wall, his hands curled into claws with the blood still dripping from the deep gashes in his palms where needle had cut him. He might be waiting to grab her as she passed. He would see her candle coming a long way off. Maybe she would be better off without the light. "Fear cuts deeper than swords," the quiet voice inside her whispered. Suddenly Arya remembered the crypts at Winterfell. They were a lot scarier than this place, she told herself. She'd been just a little girl the first time she saw them. Her brother Rob had taken them down, her and Sansa and baby Bran, who'd been no bigger than Rickon was now. They'd only one candle between them, and Bran's eyes had gotten as big as saucers as he stared at the stone faces of the kings of Winter with their wolves at their feet and their iron swords across their laps. Rob took them all the way down to the end, past Grandfather and Brandon and Lyanna, to show them their own tombs. Sansa kept looking at the stubby little candle, anxious that it might go out. Old Nan had told her there were spiders down here, and rats as big as dogs. Rob smiled when she said that. "There are worse things than spiders and rats," he whispered. "This is where the dead walk." That was when they had heard the sound, low and deep and shivery. Baby Bran had clutched at Arya's hand. When the spirit stepped out of the open tomb, pale, white, and moaning for blood, Sansa ran shrieking for the stairs, and Bran wrapped himself around Rob's leg, sobbing. Arya stood her ground and gave the spirit a punch. It was only John, covered with flour. "You stupid," she told him. "You scared the baby." But John and Rob just laughed and laughed, and pretty soon Bran and Arya were laughing too. The memory made Arya smile, and after that the darkness held no more terrors for her. The stable boy was dead. She'd killed him. And if he jumped out at her, she'd kill him again. She was going home. Everything would be better once she was home again, safe behind Winterfell's grey granite walls. Her footsteps sent soft echoes hurrying ahead of her, as Arya plunged deeper into the darkness.
Sansa. They came for Sansa on the third day. She chose a simple dress of dark grey wool, plainly cut, but richly embroidered around the collar and sleeves. Her fingers felt thick and clumsy as she struggled with the silver fastenings without the benefit of servants. Jane Poole had been confined with her, but Jane was useless. Her face was puffy from all her crying, and she could not seem to stop sobbing about her father. "I'm certain your father is well," Sansa told her when she had finally gotten the dress buttoned right. "I'll ask the Queen to let you see him." She thought that kindness might lift Jane's spirits, but the other girl just looked at her with red, swollen eyes and began to cry all the harder. She was such a child. Sansa had wept too the first day. Even within the stout walls of Meagher's Holdfast, with her door closed and barred, it was hard not to be terrified when the killing began. She had grown up to the sound of steel in the yard, and scarcely a day of her life had passed without hearing the clash of sword on sword. Yet somehow, knowing that the fighting was real, made all the difference in the world. She heard it as she had never heard it before, and there were other sounds as well. Grunts of pain, angry curses, shouts for help, and the moans of wounded and dying men. In the songs, the knights never screamed nor begged for mercy. So she wept, pleading through her door for them to tell her what was happening, calling for her father, for Septa Mordain, for the king, for her gallant prince. If the men guarding her heard her pleas, they gave no answer. The only time the door opened was late that night, when they thrust Jane Poole inside, bruised and shaking. "They're killing everyone," the steward's daughter had shrieked at her. She went on and on. The hound had broken down her door with a war hammer, she said. There were bodies on the stairs with the tar of the hand, and the steps were slick with blood. Sansa dried her own tears as she struggled to comfort her friend. They went to sleep in the same bed, cradled in each other's arms like sisters. The second day was even worse. The room where Sansa had been confined was at the top of the highest tower of Maegor's Holdfast. From its window, she could see the heavy iron portcullis in the gatehouse was down, and the drawbridge drawn up over the deep, dry moat that separated the keep within a keep from the larger castle that surrounded it. Lannister guardsmen prowled the walls with spears and crossbows to hand. The fighting was over, and the silence of the grave had settled over the Red Keep. The only sounds were Jane Poole's endless whimpers and sobs. They were fed hard cheese and fresh-baked bread and milk to break their fast, roast chicken and greens at midday, and a late supper of beef and barley stew. But the servants who brought the meals would not answer Sansa's questions. That evening, some women brought her clothes from the Tower of the Hand, and some of Jane's things as well. But they seemed nearly as frightened as Jane, and when she tried to talk to them, they fled from her as if she had the grey plague. The guards outside the door still refused to let them leave the room. "Please, I need to speak to the Queen again," Sansa told them, as she told everyone she saw that day. "She'll want to talk to me, I know she will. Tell her I want to see her, please. If not the Queen, then Prince Joffrey, if you'd be so kind. We're to marry when we're older." At sunset on the second day, a great bell began to ring. Its voice was deep and sonorous, and the long, slow clanging filled Sansa with a sense of dread. The ringing went on, and after a while they heard other bells answering from the great sept of Baelor on Visenya's hill. The sound rumbled across the city like thunder, warning of the storm to come. "What is it?" Jane asked, covering her ears. "Why are they ringing the bells?" "The king is dead." Sansa could not say how she knew, yet she did. The slow, endless clanging filled their room, as mournful as a dirge.
Had some enemy stormed the castle and murdered King Robert? Was that the meaning of the fighting they had heard? She went to sleep wondering, restless and fearful. Was her beautiful Joffrey the king now? Or had they killed him too? She was afraid for him and for her father. If only they would tell her what was happening. That night, Sansa dreamt of Joffrey on the throne, with herself seated beside him in a gown of woven gold. She had a crown on her head, and everyone she had ever known came before her to bend the knee and say their courtesies. The next morning, the morning of the third day, Sir Boris Blunt of the King's Guard came to escort her to the Queen. Sir Boris was an ugly man with a broad chest and short, bandy legs. His nose was flat, his cheeks baggy with jowls, his hair grey and brittle. Today he wore white velvet, and his snowy cloak was fastened with a lion brooch. The beast had the soft sheen of gold, and his eyes were tiny rubies. "You look very handsome and splendid this morning, Sir Boris," Sansa told him. A lady remembered her courtesies, and she was resolved to be a lady no matter what.
"And you, my lady," Sir Boris said in a flat voice. "Her Grace awaits. Come with me."
There were guards outside her door, Lannister men-at-arms in crimson cloaks and lion-crested helms. Sansa made herself smile at them pleasantly and bid them a good morning as she passed. It was the first time she had been allowed outside the chamber since Sir Aerys Oakheart had led her there two mornings past. "To keep you safe, my sweet one," Queen Cersei had told her. "Joffrey would never forgive me if anything happened to his precious." Sansa had expected that Sir Boris would escort her to the royal apartments, but instead he led her out of Maegor's Holdfast. The bridge was down again. Some workmen were lowering a man on ropes into the depths of the dry moat. When Sansa peered down, she saw a body impaled on the huge iron spikes below. She averted her eyes quickly, afraid to ask, afraid to look too long, afraid he might be someone she knew. They found Queen Cersei in the council chambers, seated at the head of a long table littered with papers, candles, and blocks of sealing wax. The room was as splendid as any Sansa had ever seen. She stared in awe at the carved wooden screen and the two sphinxes that sat beside the door.
"Your Grace," Sir Boris said, when they were ushered inside by another of the King's Guard, Sir Mandon, of the curiously dead face, "I brought the girl."
Sansa had hoped Joffrey might be with her. Her prince was not there, but three of the king's counsellors were. Lord Petar Baelish sat on the queen's left hand, Grand Maester Pycelle at the end of the table, while Lord Varys hovered over them, smelling flowery. All of them were clad in black. She realized with a feeling of dread, mourning clothes. The queen wore a high-coloured black silk gown with 100 dark red rubies sewn into her bodice, covering her from neck to bosom. They were cut in the shape of teardrops, as if the queen were weeping blood. Cersei smiled to her, and Sansa thought it was the sweetest and saddest smile she had ever seen. "Sansa, my sweet child," she said, "I know you've been asking for me. I'm sorry that I could not send for you sooner. Matters have been very unsettled, and I've had not a moment. I trust my people have been taking good care of you?"
"Everyone has been very sweet and pleasant, Your Grace. Thank you ever so much for asking," Sansa said politely. "Only, well, no one will talk to us or tell us what's happened."
"Us?" Cersei seemed puzzled.
"We put the steward's girl in with her," Sir Boris said. "We did not know what else to do with her."
The queen frowned. "Next time you will ask," she said, her voice sharp. "The guards only know what sort of tales she's been filling Sansa's head with."
"Jane's scared," Sansa said. "She won't stop crying. I promised her I'd ask if she could see her father."
Old Grand Maester Pycelle lowered his eyes. "Her father is well, isn't he?" Sansa asked anxiously. She knew there had been fighting, but surely no one would harm a Stuart. Vaen Poole did not even wear a sword.
Queen Cersei looked at each of the councillors in turn. "I won't have Sansa fretting needlessly. What shall we do with this little friend of hers, my lords?"
Lord Petar leaned forward. "I'll find a place for her."
"Not in the city," said the Queen.
"Do take me for a fool."
The Queen ignored that. "Sir Boris, escort this girl to Lord Petar's apartments and instruct his people to keep her there until he comes for her. Tell her that Littlefinger will be taking her to see her father. That ought to calm her down. I want her gone before Sansa returns to her chamber."
"As you command, Your Grace," Sir Boris said.
He bowed deeply, spun on his heel, and took his leave, his long white cloak stirring the air behind him. Sansa was confused.
I don't understand," she said. "Where is Jane's father? Why can't Sir Boris take her to him, instead of Lord Petar having to do it?"
She had promised herself she would be a lady, gentle as the Queen, and as strong as her mother, the Lady Catelyn, but all of a sudden she was scared again. For a second, she thought she might cry. "Where are you sending her? She hasn't done anything wrong. She's a good girl."
"She's upset you," the Queen said gently.
"We can't be having that. Not another word now. Lord Baelish will see that Jane's well taken care of, I promise you." She patted the chair beside her. "Sit down, Sansa. I want to talk to you." Sansa seated herself beside the Queen. Cersei smiled again, but that did not make her feel any less anxious. Varys was wringing his soft hands together. Grand Maester Pycelle kept his sleepy eyes on the papers in front of him, but she could feel Littlefinger staring. Something about the way the small man looked at her made Sansa feel as though she had no clothes on. Goosebumps pimpled her skin.
"Sweet Sansa," Queen Cersei said, laying a soft hand on her wrist. "Such a beautiful child. I do hope you know how much Joffrey and I love you."
"You do?" Sansa said, breathless. Littlefinger was forgotten. Her prince loved her. Nothing else mattered. The Queen smiled. "I think of you almost as my own daughter, and I know the love you bear for Joffrey." She gave a weary shake of her head. "I'm afraid we've had some grave news about your lord father. You must be brave, child." Her quiet words gave Sansa a chill.
"What is it?"
"Your father is a traitor, dear," Lord Varys said. Grand Maester Pycelle lifted his ancient head.
"With my own ears I heard Lord Eddard swear to our beloved King Robert that he would protect the young princes as if they were his own sons. And yet the moment the king was dead, he called the small council together to steal Prince Joffrey's rightful throne."
"No," Sansa blurted. "He wouldn't do that, he wouldn't." The Queen picked up a letter. The paper was torn and stiff with dried blood, but the broken seal was her father's, the direwolf stamped in pale wax. "We found this on the captain of your household guard, Sansa. It is a letter to my late husband's brother, Stannis, inviting him to take the crown. Please, Your Grace, there's been a mistake. Sudden panic made her dizzy and faint. Please, send for my father. He'll tell you. He would never write such a letter. The king was his friend."
"Robert thought so," said the Queen. "This betrayal would have broken his heart. The gods are kind that he did not live to see it." She sighed.
"Sansa, sweetling, you must see what a dreadful position this has left us in. You are innocent of any wrong, we all know that, and yet you are the daughter of a traitor. How can I allow you to marry my son?"
"But I love him," Sansa wailed, confused and frightened. What did they mean to do with her? What had they done to her father? It was not supposed to happen this way. She had to wed Joffrey. They were betrothed. He was promised to her. She'd even dreamed about it. It wasn't fair to take him away from her on account of whatever her father might have done.
"Oh, how well I know that child," Cersei said, her voice so kind and sweet. "Why else should you have come to me and told me of your father's plan to send you away from us, if not for love?"
"It was for love," Sansa said in a rush. "Father wouldn't even give me leave to say farewell."
She was the good girl, the obedient girl, but she had felt as wicked as Arya that morning, sneaking away from Septa Mordain, defying her lord father.
She had never done anything so willful before, and she would never have done it then if she hadn't loved Geoffrey as much as she did. He was going to take me back to Winterfell and marry me to some hedge knight, even though it was Geoff I wanted. I told him, but he wouldn't listen. The king had been her last hope. The king could command father to let her stay in King's Landing and marry Prince Geoffrey. Sansa knew he could, but the king had always frightened her. He was loud and rough-voiced and drunk as often as not, and he would probably just have sent her back to Lord Eddard if they had even let her see him. So she went to the queen instead, and poured out her heart, and Cersei had listened and thanked her sweetly. Only then Sir Aerys had escorted her to the high room in Maegor's Holdfast and posted guards, and a few hours later the fighting had begun outside. "Please," she finished, "you have to let me marry Geoffrey. I'll be ever so good a wife to him, you'll see. I'll be a queen just like you, I promise." Queen Cersei looked to the others. "My lords of the council, what do you say to her plea?" "The poor child," murmured Varys. "Loves her true and innocent, your grace. It would be cruel to deny it. And yet, what can we do? Her father stands condemned." His soft hands washed each other in a gesture of helpless distress. "A child born of traitor seed will find that betrayal comes naturally to her," said Grand Maester Pycelle. "She is a sweet thing now, but in 10 years, who can say what treason she may hatch?" "No," Sansa said, horrified. I wouldn't betray Geoffrey. I love him. I swear it, I do." "Oh, so poignant," said Varys. "And yet it is truly said that blood runs truer than oaths. She reminds me of the mother, not the father," Lord Petard Baelish said quietly. "Look at her. The hair, the eyes. She is the very image of Cat at the same age." The queen looked at her, troubled, and yet Sansa could see kindness in her clear green eyes. "Child," she said, "if I could truly believe that you are not like your father, why, nothing should please me more than to see you wed to my Geoffrey. I know he loves you with all his heart." She sighed. "And yet I fear that Lord Varys and the Grand Maester have the right of it. The blood will tell. I have only to remember how your sister set her wolf on my son." "I'm not like Arya," Sansa blurted. "She has the traitor's blood, not me. I'm good. Ask Septa Mordaunt, she'll tell you. I only want to be Geoffrey's loyal and loving wife." She felt the weight of Cersei's eyes as the queen studied her face. "I believe you mean it, child." She turned to face the others. "My lords, it seems to me that if the rest of her kin were to remain loyal in this terrible time, that would go a long way toward laying our fears to rest." The Grand Maester Pycelle stroked his huge soft beard, his wide brow furrowed in thought.
"Lord Eddard has 3 sons.
Mere boys," Lord Petard said with a shrug. "I should be more concerned with Lady Catelyn and the Tullys." The queen took Sansa's hand in both of hers. "Child, do you know your letters?" Sansa nodded nervously. She could read and write better than any of her brothers, although she was hopeless at sums. "I am pleased to hear that. Perhaps there's hope for you and Geoffrey still. What do you want me to do?" "You must write your lady mother and your brother, the eldest. What is his name?" "Rob," Sansa said. "The word of your lord father's treason will no doubt reach them soon. Better that it should come from you. You must tell them how Lord Eddard betrayed his king." Sansa wanted Geoffrey desperately, but she did not think that she had the courage to do as the queen was asking.
"But he never... I don't... Your Grace, I wouldn't know what to say."
The queen patted her hand. "We will tell you what to write, child. The important thing is that you urge Lady Catelyn and your brother to keep the king's peace."
"It will go hard for them if they don't," said Grand Maester Pycelle. "By the love you bear them, you must urge them to walk the path of wisdom."
"Your lady mother will no doubt fear for you dreadfully," the Queen said. "You must tell her that you are well and in our care, that we are treating you gently and seeing to your every want.